to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
It's a new year. You and millions of others feel an opportunity to have things be different starting now. How about being at peace? Would you like to have a year, maybe even a lifetime, being peaceful? Sounds great, doesn't it? This could be the time for you, and all of us, to give peace a chance. My guest today, Christopher Papadopoulos, is with us to talk about peace and where to find it. Full Power Living is helping the world to discover and understand the power and importance of human emotions. Whether you're listening over Blog Talk Radio or EmotionalPro.com, please join our chat with your questions and comments. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. Well, Christopher Papadopoulos lives near Montreal, Canada, the city in which he was born. He holds bachelor degrees in education and history from Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, and has served as both a primary and a high school teacher. Based on his desire to create a better world, in 1993 he ran for parliament in the Canadian federal elections. And realizing that a world of peace and harmony begins with the individual, he then embarked on an inner journey toward greater self-awareness. Then, in 2003, he experienced a permanent shift in consciousness from anxious thoughts about himself to the peace we discover when we are in touch with our authentic being. Since that time, Christopher has worked with individuals and groups, guiding others to experience peace through the process of his own self-discovery. So, Christopher Papadopoulos, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you very much, Eileen. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Christopher, when I talk to adults who are aware of the circumstances in our current world, like conditions in the Middle East and bombing in Syria and shooting and bombings in Paris and the U.S., those people despair of living in a peaceful world. And they often tell me it's human nature to be aggressive and to fight and all the ways in which we're not peaceful. But the primary message you're giving us is that peace is possible and that peace has nothing to do with our situation, yet everything to do with where our attention is. So I'd like you to tell us more about that, please.
Yes. When our attention is not here in the here and now, in the present moment, we are not able to have a more complete experience of ourselves. And in fact, when people say that it is human nature to be violent or cruel or selfish, that is not actually completely true. At the surface, when we live at the surface of reality, including our experience of ourselves, then we do have the tendency of expressing these negative and violent behaviors and ignorant behaviors. The key to all of this, Eileen, is we are not having a complete experience of ourselves. And it sounds kind of strange that what would having a more full and complete experience of ourselves have to do with peace? And in fact, it has everything to do with peace. Because at its core, in our essence, we are peace incarnate. And so when we have a more full and complete inner experience of our own connection to peace, then this alters our behaviors and we begin to manifest this in the world and we begin to see the world differently, we begin to treat others differently because we are experiencing this bedrock of peace within.
So what you're saying then is that peace is part of the fabric of all that is and therefore it's right where we are already. And I believe in your book you say we need to connect with it, not find it.
Yes, it is not something for those who despair with what's going on in the world or in their personal lives. It doesn't come through brokering deals or shaking hands amidst flashing cameras or even just doing certain activities to try and escape from our emotional suffering. What is foundational about the book and important is the astounding discovery that peace is already here. For example, everyone listening right now, Eileen, the room they are in, the space they are in, is saturated with peace. Their bodies are saturated with peace. peace, we've been looking for it. Peace has been waiting for us to notice it. And when I say that, then I'm really implying, and it's the truth, that peace is not just some very satisfying, inert, general feeling. It is intelligence itself. It is an intelligent consciousness. So it is waiting for us to notice it. And simply by turning our attention to the deep present moment, the here and now, which quiets the mind, this awareness of the peace that we are and the peace that saturates the world becomes manifest. And then we begin to eventually act on those new feelings of peace, and it changes the way we interact with the world. And this is the way we're going to bring peace to the world as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, you remind me, I've worked with a number of people who, like a friend of mine was a psychic medium, and what I learned is that the universe doesn't reach down and help you, doesn't do things for you unless you ask. And so I was just listening to you, and you were talking about peace as an intelligent consciousness, and it struck me that when we turn our attention to our real selves, we actually ask peace into us, or we ask peace to allow us to connect to it, but we're asking.
Absolutely. It's just that when we use, which is, of course, normal and common, to use words like ask, we think of this as a thought exercise, a mental activity,
yes.
And to some degree it is, but the most important part of the action of asking is not in the mental activity of imagining or thinking. It is a deeper intention to shift our attention from the abstract realm of thought or from our emotional reactions in the body to the present moment. What has happened, Eileen, is we have come to associate attention with thought. I turn my attention here. That means me, Chris the thinker, is turning my attention to look at the sofa or look at the sky outside or to think about something, when in fact attention precedes thought. It precedes mind activity. We are the essence of attention itself. We are the observer that observes all things in the universe and in our lives, including our very own thoughts. So what we're doing is, by tuning into the present moment, we quiet the mind, and essentially we are setting the intention to align with the universe so that the universe can help us.
Well, that's really, really nice. I like that. You know, it's interesting. I had a brief conversation with somebody just today who was telling me that when he gets angry with someone, he is able to tell them, let's say he felt disrespected, he's able to say that he's felt disrespected and to be calm in the situation. But he has this what he described as voices in his head saying, punch him out, get back at him, and so forth. And it, having read your book and all about the mind chatter that gets in the way of doing what you've been talking about here, it just seemed like a perfect example of the kinds of things that can get in the way of us making that connection.
Yes, this happens to everyone. It, to have our thoughts sort of operating from the lower brain centers, let's say, or the survival brain centers. These survival brain centers, of course, are very important. They need to, you know, protect us and secure us and help us get fed and clothed and sheltered. But when we operate too much from these survival brain centers, then we also are prone to the survival instincts of fight or flight, for example, and that includes, you know, aggressive thoughts or aggressive behavior. The reason that in the world so many of us operate from these survival centers is actually because we are dominated by thought itself. We are not our thoughts. We are not the me and my story character in our head, the inner monologue of me, the universe starring me character that goes on in all of our heads. These thoughts are happening to us, and we are the peaceful intelligence, compassionate intelligence behind these thoughts. But when these thoughts run our lives, essentially, it is a dysfunctional activity because we compulsively think all the time. Most of the planet does this. this compulsive activity is a dysfunctional activity, and so we revert to eventually negative tendencies and revert back to the survival brain centers, and then we tend to act out or almost act out on these violent or aggressive impulses or fearful impulses because we feel separate. When our mind is always engaged, we feel separate from everyone and disconnected, and everyone is potentially a threat. And so these are the things that we overcome when we quiet the mind, we enter the present moment, and all of a sudden, we not only feel a deeper peace inside, we feel the sacredness of the world around us, and we feel deeply interconnected to all things and all people around us, and so we're much less likely to see the other as an enemy or as a threat.
Tell me more about what you call this peace. What you're saying that we are peace. Peace is the fabric of the universe. Can you tell me? I mean, I know you spend a lot of time in your book saying you can't really put it in words. It's hard to describe, you know. But how can you describe this as best as possible for people, for us?
Yes. And yet, as you said, knowing that whatever I say ultimately will just be a poor facsimile of the real thing, the way that if I were to describe to you the taste of a grapefruit, but you had never tasted a grapefruit before, no matter how wonderful my words, no matter how Shakespearean my words would be, nothing would quite capture the actual experience of holding and smelling and tasting and swallowing and becoming one with the nutrients with an actual grapefruit. It is the same thing with peace. Peace is a direct felt experience in the body. It is a direct knowing. And so we can call it what it often feels like is a vibrantly alive stillness. Peace is uncaused, and that means it is always here. It is permanent. It is beyond this world of form. Our bodies are part of this world of form, our thoughts, our emotions, all the things you see and experience are temporary. They eventually come and go. And whereas peace is part of the realm of the formlessness, of the uncaused, it does not depend, its existence does not depend on whatever happens in the world around us. It is always here, whether we want it to be or not. I use the word peace. And other people would use the word stillness, for example, or formlessness. But all of these words for consciousness or a true essence or even the word presence feels like a deep peace in the body.
That's really nice. Yes, I know you make a big distinction about you can't think it. It's not a concept. It's a feeling.
Yes.
So I think that's really important. And so now to get back to this, we essentially have a lot of mind chatter. The mind chatter is often stories that we tell ourselves, like this person hurt my feelings and that sort of thing always happens to me, or people have been hurting me all my life, or that person is just a jerk. So we weave a story around our experiences. And thereby, we're not able to be aware, to focus our attention, to be attentive in the place where we need to be attentive, which is in the present moment.
Yes. The key is very much being much more present, and of course even the word present or now have time connotations in our world, because again we are a world dominated by thought, and thought is very much associated with this temporal world, which includes the concepts of time, when in fact present and the present moment and the now are actually pointing to something that is out of the timeline. The timeline, we can say, is the past and future. It is the measuring soft time is the measuring software of the mind, you know, helping us measure things from point A to point B, or the duration of a particular temporary event. And this is useful. We need these things, and just like we need thinking, we need thought to help us navigate this world. So thinking itself is not so much the problem. It's the problem is that we identify with thought, and therefore it becomes compulsive, and we can't switch this virtual reality software off. And in fact, it is inevitable if this software is constantly running, as it is for 99% of the planet, 99% of the time, that we're going to make stories out of everything, because this thinker is a meaning maker. It's trying to fill in the gaps and make meaning out of whatever it is interpreting, analyzing, categorizing, judging. That's what it's designed to do. But because we're not aware that we're supposed to be able to put down this wonderful tool, you know, during the day frequently, we think everything is supposed to have a meaning, and we believe in these stories we do create about ourselves and others. And so our world is full of stories, and our perception of the world and ourselves is full of stories and meaning-making, simply because, not because these stories and this meaning is so essential and important, but simply because this virtual reality software, the thinker, is constantly running when it's not supposed to be.
And so you remind me, when my son was two, he ran across our living room so fast that he bumped into a chair. And as he was lying on the floor, he said, "That chair made me fall down." And his father and I pointed out that he had made himself fall down by running into the chair. And it struck me as a simple illustration of how it is that we do create stories around our experience, and those stories then can either stimulate or move into being emotions. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, it is very true that it is not so much, you know, our thoughts or it is not so much what happens to us, but it is our thoughts and the way we interpret what happens to us, like in the example you gave, that creates the problem. Because something happens, we attribute meaning to it, a particular story to it, and so that what happens is we automatically have a reaction in the body to our thoughts about what happens. We think our emotions are directly a direct response to what's happening around us, but in fact what happens quickly is our quick interpretation of what's happening that our body is reacting to, because that's where we have our emotions. We have them in the body, and these emotions are a reflection of our thoughts, our interpretations, our immediate interpretation of what has happened. And this is the power of this is the reason why we need to have greater present moment awareness, the power of the pause, so we don't go into these automatic impulses that are survival impulses that were supposed to help us in particular crisis situations so that we can respond quickly to something. But so many of the things that we see on TV in our lives, we don't have to respond instantaneously with a microsecond reaction for survival, but we have this impulse to react to something, and we do it by reacting through our thoughts, and we don't have that pause, and so the impulse takes us over, and we have this deep reaction in the body. We have emotions in the body that create suffering for us.
Mm-hmm. Wow, my brain just races as you're talking. I'm thinking about, and I know that you offer a solution to this, but I am thinking about how bombarded we are with advertising messages, cultural messages, so-called news, catastrophe messages, constantly. And the notion of being able to find anything close to peace through all of that is really challenging, and it makes me appreciate your method even more. We're up to our first break, and when we come back from the break, what I'd like you to do is let's talk about how you use the body to get at the peacefulness, the peace. Okay?
Great.
All right. I'm talking today with teacher, leader, and author Christopher Papadopoulos, who regarding ideas expressed in his book, Peace and Where to Find It. Discover how feeling your body can save the world, coming up on Full Power Living.
ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them. Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. We've been broadcasting since the middle of 2004, and we've had the privilege of bringing you in-depth conversations with some of the most forward-thinking, cutting-edge people on the planet today. Some of those include Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Dr. Candace Pert, Chopra Institute co-founder Dr. David Simon, Namaste Publishing founder Constance Kellogg, relationships expert Dr. Harville Hendricks, and many, many others, including Christopher Papadopoulos, who's with us today and whose work is published by the Namaste Publishing Company. And we want you to be able to listen to every one of our shows, so we invite you to register at emotionalpro.com to get our twice-weekly newsletter. That way we can keep you up to date on the shows and topics we have for you on Full Power Living. And also when you're on the site, you can download my free list of the signals of 7 everyday emotions, which you can use to move yourself toward emotional mastery. Next week on Full Power Living, we're going to Australia to talk with Dr. Rosina McAlpine. She's the developer of Win-Win Parenting, and we're going to talk about how to raise inspired children. Dr. Rosina is a plain-talking, enthusiastic, and warm person who helps parents with everyday challenges by offering common-sense solutions. I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to her. So join me for that show, January 28th, Thursday, from 9 to 10 Pacific time, which is noon to 1 Eastern time also. Well, my guest today is Christopher Papadopoulos, who's author of Peace and Where to Find It. One of the places you can find Christopher on the web is the Namaste website, which is namastepublishing.com, namastepublishing.com. So, Christopher, you were inspired, I believe, by reading Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now about 12 years, and then about 12 years ago, your consciousness shifted. And I thought it would be interesting for us to know what you were like before the shift and what you're like now.
That's a good question. I guess I feel like I'm pretty much the same personality-wise. It's something I can say that perhaps to reassure some listeners who are aware of the idea of consciousness shifting or awakening to the now, that we completely change. Obviously, there are a number of changes, but in terms of some of our more fundamental personality traits, let's say the positive ones, our sense of humor, our unique sense of style or ways of viewing the world, our ways of interacting with loved ones, a lot of those things stay, pardon me, to some degree, simply because It's something that we're used to. We're comfortable interacting with people that have known us for a long time. And it makes it comfortable for them that you don't, you know, dramatically change and just become this vegetable on the sofa that doesn't interact because they're so happy being at peace that they don't interact with anyone that they know. So to reassure listeners, you very much, you know, will still have your same sense of humor, and many people will still notice some of the kernels of your personality shine through. But yes, there are changes as well, because you do feel a depth and a sacredness to whatever you perceive. You will tend to be a lot quieter about things. You will tend to feel a subtle joy regardless of what's happening around you. Tend to be much more observant of things and are very accepting of allowing life to unfold as it is without overreacting to things. So, and I think before that, of course, I felt I was still a pretty happy person and ebullient person, enthusiastic. I was, I guess, in the 90s, a bit of a new age kid. I guess I was in my 30s already, or 20s and 30s, but I call myself a new age kid and a spiritual seeker interested in crystals and shamanic traditions and healing energies. But I wasn't really into meditation or specifically focusing on the now. So in some ways, there were definitely some differences between what I was and what I am now. And as you mentioned, the key catalyst for me was in the Bavarian, I mentioned this in the book, in the Bavarian Alps, I had, I guess, a long moment of clarity during a fasting retreat in the Bavarian Alps in Germany. There was, perhaps it was on the 16th day of a long retreat, of a long fasting retreat, that I re-entered my hotel room, and I had the experience that everything was God. Whatever you want God, if you don't want to use the word God, that's fine with me. But there was the walls, the doorknob, the bed, my body, everything I looked at, it said it seemed as if it was replying back to me, God, God, this is God, this is God. And and I'd had experienced, Eileen, in the past, you know, some extraordinary moments of bliss and other types of metaphysical experiences that sort of fueled my pursuit of who am I and why am I here and why are we all here. But this was different because it kind of came with the message, as Chris, you're going to find within the mundane simplicity of the here and now, that's where you're going to find your God nature, your essence. And so when I returned at the end of 2000 back to Canada, I, within a month or so, discovered Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, and as soon as I read it, I knew this was it for me. This is what I've been waiting for. I had many friends who were studying yoga and meditation, but none of that really appealed to me. I had my own kind of homemade versions of meditation that appealed to me, but I was reading his book that I realized, okay, I have to not just talk the talk, but really walk the walk. And within a few years, my sense of the connection to the past fell away, eventually my sense of connection for desire and want and future fell away. And let me reassure listeners that when the sense of your past falls away, it can sound pretty scary, and it's not. I still remember the things that everyone remembers and can share fond memories with family and friends, but I no longer feel like that is who I am. I need those stories to fulfill myself and create an identity for myself. They are just lovely memories that I have and that this body has experienced, but I no longer have a connection to them the same way that you have dreams, and the dreams seem so real, but when you wake up in the morning, you realize, oh, that was just something that I believed happened in the dream, and it didn't happen to me, and it's not who I am. So it's not such a big deal.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's really interesting. I have a son who's in his 30s now, and he, like you, he likes crystals and all those kinds of things as he was growing up. And I had a very challenging childhood, and I've been a psychotherapist, so I talked about the challenges of my childhood frequently. And to me, I had been in therapy, and I'd handled a lot of them, so I didn't have a lot of emotional energy around them, but I still had those experiences, and out of those experiences came the ways in which I looked at things now. And my son, for years, was upset with me at talking about this all the time. He told me that I was defining myself by these experiences and that I was so much more. And he was upset with me that I wasn't claiming the so much more. And probably about 7 or 8 years ago, I decided, now it's interesting about story, because I decided to rewrite my history. In other words, I was going to write a different story. That yes, like you said, I had those experiences. They're part of me. I remember them. I didn't forget them. But they really are no longer important. I'm on to other things. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. I guess it is very much that way. That is an important step on our ever-expanding self-awareness journey. The story starts shifting. We begin to realize, well, we could have also, noticed all of these other things. It's often just a handful of traumatic events and maybe peak experiences that we use to define ourselves and make our own little inner monologue story of ourselves, our own personal resume of who we are. But if you think of all the things that happen to us every day and how many things we even forget, we could have used any of those things. So many, thousands of other things to redefine ourselves, to describe who we are. But for whatever reason, based on our level of awareness, our level of self-awareness of who we thought we were, we chose particular things. And as we change, as we grow, as we expand in self-awareness, which really means we become more aware that we are all collectively one and that we are in our essence, we are this peaceful, intelligent, universal consciousness. The closer we get to that direct felt experience in the body, that direct knowing, then when we reflect on our past, we begin to notice that, well, maybe these things that I used to define me really aren't so much me, and I could have chosen other things in my past to better reflect who I am now. And eventually, Eileen, you may just drop all of them together and just say, well, all these things happened, and I'm glad they helped me and this body on this journey towards, fulfillment and awareness. But I really have no strong attachment to any of these things. And so if you, right, in the future, share your story with someone, you may just share some general highlights to give, you're doing it for their benefit, to give them a general feeling of who you, what you've experienced, but you yourself will feel no great attachment to these things.
Right. Thank you for that. Yeah. So, what you offer in your book is that our body is the fastest and most reliable way to help us stay in the present and to connect with this peace that is always there. That's what we need to do. We need to be in the present because that's how we connect with it, right?
Yes, this is something that is mentioned and yet often overlooked, or in spiritual teachings, in what, even if it's yoga, meditation, all kinds of paths, we focus on the ideas around certain behavior, whether it's meditation or yoga or other practices, and we get caught up in the concepts, the ideas, the rituals, and we forget simply, the body itself, the direct experience of the body itself. Because what is it that goes to the retreats? What is it that reads the books and watches the videos? What is it that listens to the meditation music? What is it that holds the poses? What do all paths, activities, endeavors have in common? It's the body. And it seems so obvious, but it's something that most of the planet is disconnected from. And it's not an accident, because when we're lost in thought, which is the main premise of the book, that prevents us from experiencing the peace of our essence, we are also disconnected from our bodies. We are completely consumed and lost in the abstract realm, and we're not here in the concrete with the body. And why the body is so essential is because the body and its sensations can only be felt now. You cannot feel your body yesterday. You cannot feel your body tomorrow. You can think about that and imagine it, but you cannot physically have a direct sensory experience of your body any other moment but now. And so when we enter the body with our full and felt attention, this automatically quiets the mind, which is designed to live in the virtual abstract realm out of the present moment. Simply attending to the body fully and feeling it without judgment, without reaction, that helps us deepen our present moment awareness and helps quiet the mind so that we can rediscover our true nature.
Wow. Well, as I think I mentioned to you, and our listeners certainly know, my husband is dealing with stage 4 cancer. And yesterday he was in a good deal of pain and quite anxious, and I've been reading your book this weekend. So I asked him for to do one of the exercises that I read about in your book, Peace. I asked him to pay attention to the difference in temperature between the air coming into his body on his in-breath and that going out on the out-breath. And it brought him immediate relief, and I want to let you know that and thank you for that.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and it's been interesting entertaining your ideas about the power of being in the body as I am with my husband, who both is more in his body now than I think he's ever been, and yet his body is not supporting him well. It's painful to him, so it's hard for him to stay there, too. It really, I guess that's part of our human condition, too.
Yes, absolutely, and let me emphasize to listeners that despite the importance, the absolute essential importance of inhabiting our bodies with our attention, sometimes there is, you know, excruciating pain, and we cannot go directly into that pain and feel it. It is natural and normal to want to escape that sensation and move away from it. And we take remedies and we do certain things sometimes because we need just to distract ourselves. We need to just take certain things to calm the pain down, and because we just aren't capable. We've never practiced this in our lives. We didn't grow up practicing body awareness, deep body awareness. That is also why, though, I do offer different anchors. And for example, someone who's feeling, you know, deep discomfort in the core of their body, in their torso, where a lot of the suffering is happening, for example, in many people, whether it's emotional suffering or physical illness, simply feeling the breath is a way of anchoring our attention on the sensations of the body. That's a bit more peripheral in some ways, and it helps. Following the breath helps us follow our awareness more deeply into the body in a gentle way when sometimes the pain is too overwhelming. And eventually, we can not only focus on feeling the body, the body's breath, we can focus on the expansion and the contraction of the torso with every breath. That has been happening since the moment we were born and will happen, you know, for the rest of our lives. These are simple, obvious things that we never notice because the mind has so many more important things to think about. when in fact, these simple things, like noticing the difference in temperature on the inhales and exhales, noticing that the torso is always in motion from the active respiration, noticing the tension levels in different parts of the body, these simple things can really help us anchor ourselves. And eventually we can go in there and notice that there's also emotion tied up with the physical pain. And when we really get good at concentrating in a relaxed way on whatever's in being an observer of whatever's happening in the body without mental distraction, we create space. Our attention creates space around any energy under pressure. And the physical illness is a very, very dense form of that. Emotional pain is also kind of like energy that's blocked and is circulating in the body and trapped. And when we give it our undivided attention, we create space around it so that energy can dissipate to some degree. And we will notice that not only emotional discomfort will dissipate, but even to some degree, some of the physical pain will also be alleviated from doing this. So it's a very powerful practice. It also boosts the immune system, which, of course, we need when we're very ill. And there are a variety of techniques and anchors in the book, what I call anchors, anchoring our attention into the body to help us anchor our attention into the present moment. And sometimes one way is just too painful and too difficult, so there's another way, or I show it a different way in the book to get around that. So we can all find our way in, regardless of our level of health and our level of awareness, to find a way into our bodies, to anchor our attention there and begin the process of deepening our experience of our peaceful essence.
That's really helpful. Thank you. I want to go a little further on something you just said. You refer to emotions as energy under pressure, or that's a way we can look at them. And you advise people to let their emotions be as they are, avoid giving them a name, and then create space by giving our full attention, and then they won't be able to sustain themselves. And I got really fascinated. You just were talking about space. And you do quite a bit of talking in your book about space and just seeing the space in, like, the room you're in. Usually we look at the objects, but what about the space between the objects? What about the space in our own bodies? Will you talk a little bit more about space, Christopher?
Yes, because, as I said, the mind is constantly engaged, and again, this wonderful thinking tool that we have engaged too often. It should be put down frequently during the day, like any good tools. But because it's on all the time, it is designed not only to make meaning and make stories out of whatever happens, as we discussed before, but it's also designed to focus on form. This tool, the thinking tool, is a form itself, and it is also designed to operate in the material world, in the world of form. Even the abstract imaginings and concepts and ideas that we have in our head, those are also subtle forms of a higher frequency, but they are not the formless, peaceful awareness that is our essence, that is beyond this universe, we can say. And so since this thinking mind is designed to operate in the world of form, that's all it pretty much notices. But because we are not simply just forms ourselves, even though we have thought, we have this body and we have these thoughts, we are this extraordinary energy being that is able to straddle the realms of form and formlessness. Often we'll use the word spirit to describe the realm of formlessness. Whatever the word you want is completely fine. When we turn our attention to silence, when we turn our attention to the empty space in a room, for example, we're beginning to switch off the mind, which is designed to focus on the forms in the room, the objects. And so another technique that I use in the book is focusing on silence, focusing on empty space. And I also mention, Eileen, that with a little bit of knowledge, it can help with this shift in our perspective. For example, listeners, whatever room you're in, if you were to lift the roof off the room you're in and fill it with concrete completely until it was a solid block, that solid block of concrete would still be 99.99% empty space, just like your body is more than 99.99% empty space. The distance between the nucleus and the electrons and the distance between individual atoms and a molecule are far greater than the actual so-called solid objects. And when we begin to accept this science and use that to encourage us to notice the empty space all around us and in our bodies, we begin to physically feel in ourselves and begin to notice around us that most of the world is empty space. And our bodies actually feel like this wonderful, vast, empty space. But it is empty of form, Eileen, but it is not empty of essence. It feels like a fullness, but this fullness is a wonderful feeling, including peace and joy and love. But all of these things, again, are not solid forms. They come from, the God dimension, the sacred dimension of existence, if you wish.
So there's space, but there's not necessarily emptiness.
Yes, I use emptiness when we're referencing the realm of form, like the physical world, and of course we call it empty space. It is empty of forms, but this emptiness, this nothingness, meaning no things, no objects, is still full of peace, full of consciousness, full of an incredible intelligence, the intelligence that created the universe, let us say. And this, it actually feels fulfilling. And it's actually the thing that we're all looking for. That's why we go out and seek to consume and inquire more objects and more experiences and more relationships. We are trying to feel the fulfillment that is actually waiting for us right here and now to feel. We are wholeness we are fulfillment incarnate, but by using this mental software, which divides the world into little conceptual bits and pieces and makes us feel separate, we actually lose touch with this essence, this feeling of fulfillment that is actually our birthright to feel.
Wow. You're not just talking about light things here. Okay.
No, and that's when I wrote the book. This had to be really important to me, not just to, as Constance Kello, my publisher, says, just put more words into the world. Because Eckhart Tolle, who wrote the introduction to my book, and there are many other teachers as well that you've even had on your show, so many wonderful teachers, so many important things to say, and I really felt that there were some basic things that a lot of my students, some of them are meditation teachers and yoga teachers themselves, were missing in their teaching and missing in their own personal experiences of self-awareness. And the simplicity of, when we talk about personal peace or world peace, we need to shift our perspective. It needs to become a reflex to almost say, oh, yes, I see that horrible thing on the TV again, what's happening in the world, but I have to remember that even that terrible scene is saturated with peace. And the key is those people we're looking at are just like me. And what we all have in common is we are all having an incomplete experience of ourselves. And if we had a more full experience of ourselves, that horrible thing on the TV wouldn't be happening, and the personal suffering in my life would also not be happening. And I needed to emphasize that with reference to peace, because it's something that we talk about so much and yet really don't feel so much. And I also emphasize the importance of body awareness, because it's something that even spiritual seekers tend to avoid. They tend to do a lot of mental journeying and visualizing or even positive affirmations. Nothing wrong with that. They should be a kickstarter to something deeper, because these are still mental activities that, if we keep using these mental activities, then this egoic condition, this thinking me that we've created and then we identify with, stays dominant in our lives, and we never get back in touch with our deeper peaceful essence. And so I needed to emphasize body awareness, and it's true. When we can go deeply into the body, not only will we feel peace, it is the key to changing the world and saving the world. So let me reassure listeners that it's not simply something we have to feel powerless and helpless to creating peace in this world. In fact, it is your responsibility. You are able to respond. You have the control and power over this. You have to have a more complete experience of yourself. And when you do, you'll discover that the peace has always been here waiting for you. And that is the key to personal peace and world peace. There is no other way.
So let me give a small personal affirmation to this end of what you've just been talking about. In the early 1990s, I wrote a series of handbooks for parents, helping them to teach their children how to work with emotion. And one of the books I wrote was called Exploring Love with Your Child. And in researching it myself, I came across the notion that love is love is love. That is, it doesn't matter if you're loving yourself or you're loving someone else. What matters is that you accept or utilize love as the principle that you work with in your life. And I decided who you are. I decided to do that. And that's been, you know, a number of years, more than 20 years now. But at the same time, I ended up bringing a lot of love inside of me. And what you're saying essentially is that we really live our lives. One thing you're saying is that we really live our lives from the inside out. So if I fill myself up with love, then I will be in rapport with love outside of me. And that's what has happened. And you're saying the same thing for peace. When you go ahead and become peace, then peace will emanate from you and peace will be yours from outside of you and around you. Is that an accurate way of saying it?
Yes, and so it's not surprising there's a parallel between peace and love, because essentially they are just, if you think of the mystery of the divine, of consciousness, of the awareness of the essence of what we are as a diamond with many facets. When you look through one facet, the light shines differently than when you look through another facet of that diamond. And peace and love are just simply different expressions of this grand mystery of being, of essence, of the universe, of consciousness, whatever you want to call it, of spirit. And so, of course, the principles apply. They're very much the same. Let me basically add to the wonderful things you described about love and the wonderful insights that why love is love is love, and it's really regardless of the situation, because that really love may take on slightly different flavors, but essentially it is one thing. And that is because love is essentially, at its deepest level, a felt recognition in the body of our oneness with whoever or whatever it is we are experiencing. That is at the deepest level what love is. It is definitely, as you know, not possessive, something that we cling to and hold on to or even can manufacture. It already is. And when we feel in our bodies that we are deeply connected and one with someone else or something else, the feeling in the body is what we normally call love. And that is why it is, regardless of the situation, it is there for us to experience. The experience of our oneness is also there waiting for us to experience.
Mm-hmm. And as you're saying also, that peace operates the same way or is cut of the same cloth, so to speak. Yes. So now I want to be sure before we end the show to point out, you were talking... First of all, let me just say that I love the simplicity with which you've written your book. It came to my attention in the late 80s that people who are really expert in the area in which they're talking seem always to strive for simplicity. I discovered that in the Picasso Museum in Barcelona, Spain. And so I just want to appreciate that I see that you worked really hard to I don't know if you worked hard, but you made a point of making this simple in many ways, and I think that that's brilliant and wonderful. But the other part is that you have a whole lot of things that people can do in order to bring their awareness to this present moment place of connecting ourselves with who we really are, with that peace. You have a daily awareness routine. You back that up with instructions for meditation. You offer a yes walk. You talk about becoming a witnessing presence, and you even add a few quick fixes. So one of the things I wanted to ask you to do is to talk a little bit about, you say, a wise person cultivates awareness in each and every moment, since no other place or time is real. And that you tie in together, we can bring ourselves to peace when we're sitting in a traffic jam or when we decide just to relax our shoulders. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, in fact, many of the techniques were, and you know, as you know, there are bookloads of techniques to help us meditate or relax or concentrate, and so many of them are valid. The ones that I've chosen were, a lot of them stemmed from some work that I had done with students in a few places, including California years ago, where the attitude was, Christopher, I'm sorry, this is great, but I don't have time for techniques. I'm busy all the time, da-da-da-da-da. And so I decided I'm going to try and come up with techniques that don't add one extra second to your day. And basically, even science, you know, has now shown through studies that, in fact, the busiest people, if they really look at their day, still have potentially hours of downtime or free time while they're waiting for something to happen. And their minds know they're in the process of something happening, but they're waiting. Just waiting for, you know, the commercial to end to get back to our TV show is downtime. We can mute the commercial and feel our bodies, feel the breath, on inhales and exhales, relax the muscles in our bodies, for example. Waiting, at a traffic light, we can also just become aware of our bodies once again, making contact with the car seat, feeling our fingers, feeling the expansion and contraction of our torso with every breath that happens all the time. Simply becoming aware, that you haven't been aware of your breath all day is not a failure. It's a huge success, because most of us go through life so lost in the virtual realm and the abstract realm that this numbs our awareness of our body. And by simply returning our attention to our body, we're finally giving what our body craves. It doesn't crave all the power and stimulants and drugs and distractions and experiences that we give it. It craves attention from us. And when we finally give it, it finally relaxes. And this is really, really powerful stuff. And so there is lying down, not just waiting for commercials or waiting for a text message reply or waiting at a traffic light or waiting in line at the supermarket or the ATM, but also we're waiting to go to sleep. Instead of just having the TV on or tossing and turning, there are often 5, 10, 15 minutes where we're trying to fall asleep. We can use that on our backs to start scanning our bodies, feeling the aliveness there, feeling our breath. And we can do the same thing before jumping out of bed in the morning. These exercises are not taking up any extra time. You're already doing something. You're trying to accomplish relaxation or sleep. And you'll find you have literally hours, but even if you only have 20 or 30 minutes a day, doing these things frequently during the day is a very powerful activity and begins the process of greater self-awareness, greater presence, and reducing your stress levels dramatically.
Mm-hmm. And so just to stretch it one bit further, that you also make a point in your book, is when we become or be this peace in ourselves, and a lot of us, a bunch of us, start doing this, then that same peace will be in our world. Correct?
Yes. On many levels. One, simply because this peace is not just, as I said, an inner general feeling. It is an intelligence. It is an energy. We begin to resonate with this peace, and so it affects. But because it is beyond time and space, essentially, if you begin to resonate this peace here, it is having effects in the far reaches of the world as well as affecting the people and places around you, energetically, vibrationally. But also, of course, because you are experiencing this peace, your own behaviors begin to change, your own choices, the things you begin to notice begin to change, the connections you make with others, all connections that will maybe help bring about a synergy, so that all of a sudden you're forming groups and collectives coming together to change things. All of these things begin to happen as well. And in fact, as I said before, it seems kind of strange, but all of the things we do to try to broker peace in the world are only temporary. They're temporary episodes or events of relative calm. And these things are noble and they're worthy. It's worthy when we can broker a peace deal and cease violence for a period of time. But this is not the permanent peace I'm talking about. And eventually, as we've seen again and again over human history, the violence comes back. And it comes back because the root cause is never addressed. And the root cause is this egoic condition, this me and my story thinking character in our heads that we identify with. We don't treat it as a tool that it should be put down. It controls our lives, and it creates the illusion that we're separate and not connected, and makes us fearful and eventually violent and or indifferent to others. And we have to switch this thinking mind off, return to a deeper awareness of the presence and peace that we are. And this is, again, can only happen with body awareness, and why, and ultimately, feeling our bodies is potentially the most radical and revolutionary act this world may ever know. As I say in the book, there's no greater threat to the current world order of violence, inequality, and suffering than by going into our bodies, something no one else can do for us and something we have power over. By doing that, we begin to manifest peace in our personal lives, and we begin the process of manifesting peace on the planet.
I'm so impressed with the job you have accepted from the universe to be bringing this message to us. Thank you. I was listening to you and thinking, you know, in this world, that's almost a courageous message. And yet I really get that its time has come and you have made yourself available to bring that to us. So I'm excited for many, many people to read your book, Peace, and Where to Find It, and apply the wisdom that you've talked about today and that your book holds. So thank you for accepting that job and for following through with it. I appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Eileen. It's my pleasure, and thank you to everyone listening. And yes, that's what I'll be doing for the next however long I'm on this planet. It'll be spreading the message and helping to embody this message and helping others embody their own peace as well.
That's great. Well, thank you for being with us here on Full Power Living today also, Christopher.
Thank you very much.
I've been talking with Christopher Papadopoulos, who is author of Peace and Where to Find It. Next week, you simply must hear my interview with Dr. Rosina McAlpine, who is a University of Sydney professor and developer and instructor of win-win parenting. She's going to talk about how to develop inspired children. January 28th, 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific time, noon to 1 Eastern time. So Paul Johnson of Fresh Talk Media is our producer. Thank you, Paul. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.